This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Where We Live is a show with a sense of place. If you're a regular listener, you know we often explore Connecticut and its people, the issues that matter to us and our place in this country and in this world. Have you thought about why you live where you live? Is home the town where you were born? Or did you find yourself in a particular place because of a job or because of love? Today, Where We Live, we find out why Americans will move an average of 12 times in their lifetime. Author Melody Warnick joins us to talk about her book, This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving the Place You Live. What makes you want to stay in your town or city? Or are you itching to move? We want to hear from you. Comment on our website, wmpr.org/where we live. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Melody Warnick is a freelance journalist whose work has appeared in several publications, including The Atlantic's City Lab, Reader's Digest, and Better Homes and Gardens. Her new book is called This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving the Place You Live. She joins us today from the studios of WVTF Public Radio in Roanoke, Virginia. Melody, welcome to Where We Live.
Thanks so much for having me.
So first off, I wanted to ask you, how many times have you moved in your lifetime?
So I've been telling people lately that I've moved 6 times in the past 12 years or so among 5 different states. But when I actually started counting it up, if I count, you know, college dorms and things like that, it's actually 16 times. So I am slightly above the national average of, you know, a little over 11 moves per person.
And so when did you decide to write this book? What prompted you to think about, the idea that we move a lot in our lifetime?
It was my last move. I was living in Austin with my family, and we'd only been there a couple of years. And we moved there thinking, like a lot of people think about Austin, that this was going to be the place we stayed forever. Austin has a great reputation. People think of it as, you know, a really cool city. And when my husband got a job there, we thought, yes, you know, this is where we're going to stay. And then after a couple of years, he didn't love it so much. And he was sick of the heat and the traffic. And he got a new job in Blacksburg, Virginia. And we moved again. All these moves take such a toll. I heard that you are in the middle of a move, Lucy. And so you probably know how chaotic it can be, how overwhelming. And when you're moving, it just, that is the thing you think about. It is the big thing in your life. So I knew a lot of people who were in this stage where they were moving a lot. And yet no one really was talking about why we were moving or what we should do when we got to the new place to feel more comfortable and settled there. And that process sometimes takes so long. I really wanted to understand it a little better and make myself happier in my new town.
That's interesting. When you were talking about your move from Austin to Blacksburg, you mentioned your husband. So it was his job that prompted you to try Austin and then later to Blacksburg. And so that's often what takes us to a place is our connection, whether it be to a partner, a spouse. Maybe we want to move back home closer to our relatives. But I think the family connection really matters here.
Yeah, absolutely. Family connection is one of the main reasons recorded by the census for why people choose to move. Some of the other ones are jobs or housing. You move because you want to live in a city with a lower cost of living, or you want to upgrade your home, so you move to the next town over or something like that. So those are the practical reasons people move. But I think at heart, there are a lot of more soulful reasons. You know, if people asked why my husband and I moved from Austin, Texas to Blacksburg, Virginia, we would tell people, oh, it was a job. There's an actual reason we're moving. But if we dug into it, why did we move to Blacksburg? Because we wanted a different quality of life. We wanted to be in a slightly smaller town. We wanted to be in a place that had 4 seasons. I've heard of people who move across the country because they want to live near the ocean, or because they want to be in the mountains, or, you know, like you said, they want to be near family. So the practical reason is kind of the overlay for sometimes deeper reasons. I think at heart, a lot of us move because we want to find a better place. I know that in all these years of moving, I always had this sense that the next town would be the perfect town. You know, I would somehow find the place where I belonged, everything clicked for me. And not only would my life be better, but I would be a magically better person. Everything about my situation would change. And it took many years before I realized that although towns and cities where you live changes your life, it's still you in that place. And if you want to be happy there, you have to choose it. There isn't a perfect place.
Melody, I wanted to ask you about the changes in generations. So my parents or our grandparents, it seems that at one time that it made more sense and it was common that you stayed in your hometown and you lived there and you had loyalty to one job. That seems like a thing of the past today.
There's still a surprising number of people who stay in their hometown. As I researched the book, I was kind of shocked to discover that about 37% of Americans still live in their hometown. But I think the thing that has changed is there's kind of a stigma to that.
That's right.
People feel like if you want to progress in the world, if you want to be upwardly mobile, you need to move around a lot. And a lot of times when we think of getting a new job, we think of moving to a new place. That's how you progress in your career. So people who choose to stay in their hometown because it's what they love are kind of seen with suspicion. You know, there's something wrong with you. You have opted out of the American dream because you have chosen this place over, you know, perhaps some financial benefits that you might have gotten for moving to a bigger city or, you know, moving more often. So I think as Americans, we're really restless. About 12% of Americans move each year, and that's about 38 million people. So it's kind of an amazingly large number. And there are so many reasons for it, but I think a lot of us have lost that ability to simply stay put and be happy where we are. We want to move on to the next job, the next town. We're kind of constantly thinking of the next big thing in our lives, and it makes it difficult to simply stay and be content.
I was speaking with a staff member here who would be considered a Gen Xer, and she said that, you know, that generation is considered the nomad generation.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a Gen Xer too. And, you know, I look around at my friends, and this is kind of how we've handled our lives. I have one friend who, you know, my husband and I met in grad school. We were living in Iowa at the time. And since we've known them, they've moved, I think, 4 or 5 additional times, and they kind of keep hopscotching around from state to state. And it's usually, you know, for a job, we're trying something new. But in a way, I think they're just looking for their happy place, and they haven't quite found it. You know, sometimes when we have other problems in our lives, you know, we're not happy with our jobs or our career, or we have debt, or, you know, we're struggling with money, we think that the solution will be moving somewhere else. And in some ways, different towns can make an impact on those things. There's a lot of research that says certain places have higher levels of well-being, or people in this town live longer than people in the other town, or this place has a lower cost of living. So it pays to be wise about where you choose to live and how that will affect your quality of life. But I think the missing ingredient is deciding at some point to not be a nomad anymore. That at some point there are benefits that we get from simply choosing to love and be attached to the place we live now.
I want to take a few calls from listeners. Paul from New Haven, you're on Where We Live, Paul.
I moved to New Haven totally by accident. I graduated from Wesleyan University, my first choice as a college, and I had no idea what I was going to do afterwards. So I said, where's the nearest city that has good train service to Boston and New York? And I ended up in a place that, oddly enough, replicated my childhood, because I grew up in Manhattan with my mother at the time, and on the eastern end of Long Island half time with my father, so half urban and half rural. And I find New Haven is a cosmopolitan city, which is great, and I can go kayaking and bicycling in surrounding towns, and I've lived in surrounding towns too. I am back in New Haven. one of the people migrating from the suburbs back to the city. So that's the essence of my story. I love it here.
Well, I'm glad to hear that that you love Connecticut, Paul. And Melody, it was interesting to hear Paul talk about the fact that, you know, he's in a place where it's easy for him to be mobile as well. Like, where's the nearest train station? Where can I go?
Right. I love Paul's story because I love hearing, you know, how people ended up where they are and what made them choose that. And he said, you know, he kind of stumbled into it by accident and then realized, you know, it fulfilled all these needs in his life, you know, the ability to get out in nature, go kayaking and hiking. And also, like you mentioned, you know, the ability to have easy transportation. That's a huge thing because commuting is one of the things that lowers our quality of life dramatically. It's so stressful. So if you can live in a place where you're near your job, where you either have a really short car commute or you can bike or walk, it makes you so much happier. I've talked to a few people in writing the book, This Is Where You Belong, who were incredibly analytical about choosing where they lived. I met one person who moved to Roanoke, Virginia, where I am right now. And before he did, he was living in upstate New York and he knew he wanted to change. And so he made this spreadsheet of all the qualities that mattered to him. And they might not have been the qualities that mattered to other people, but for him, it was things like access to local cinema and a low prevalence of Lyme disease and things like that. And he, you know, made this spreadsheet, considered about 25 or 30 different cities and tried places out and eventually settled in Roanoke. But for some people, it really is just kind of a feeling you get, you know. It may involve a little bit of investigation, you know, hey, this is near the commuter railroad and that sounds like a good place, or I can afford the apartment here. But once you're there, you may find that it works really well for you. Something about it just fits your life.
I want to take another call. Jessica from West Hartford. Jessica, you're on Where We Live.
Hi. I'm calling as I'm sitting in my driveway waiting for the moving truck to arrive because the movers are coming today, and we're moving back to West Hartford. I grew up here, and we've been living actually in Paris, France for the past few years. My husband's job brought us abroad. We've lived in a few states other than that, and when it came time to leave Europe and we were trying to decide where to go, we thought a lot about it, and we'd lived in downstate Connecticut, we've lived in other states, and we decided for me, West Hartford is really a place that's home, it's near family, it has the quality of life that we want in terms of housing costs and quality of the schools and the religious institutions, and so it was a really tough choice for us to decide where to live, and we're excited because we're moving in today, and I'm really excited to be happy about the place that we chose, and it is overwhelming moving, as I can tell you right now, but we're happy that it has a good feeling to it, so I think that was important for us.
Well, welcome back to Connecticut, Jessica. We don't often hear that story, and you just prompted me to remind our listeners, soon we'll be talking about out-migration and why people are leaving Connecticut. But again, good to hear from Jessica that she's heading back to Connecticut, and the moving truck is there. Good luck with that move back into West Hartford, Jessica.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, congratulations, Jessica. Those moves are, you know, even when this is a well-considered move and you are happy to be there, simply moving can feel like you are just in over your head. But Jessica said something really interesting, that she chose to move where she had grown up because she had family nearby and it felt like home. And that is actually one of the main things that make us happy where we live. There's a study that says that the people who are the least likely to move are ones who live within an hour's drive of six members of their family. So, you know, if you settle relatively near, you know, parents or siblings, you have a better chance of being happy and wanting to stay.
I'm speaking with Melody Warnick. She's the author of This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving the Place You Live. Why do you choose to live in Connecticut? Again, we're also hearing from some callers. Please stay on the line who want to share why they've moved away. When we return from the break, we're going to hear a little bit more from Melody about the scientific literature she uncovered, the actual term for people finding the place that they call home. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. There's a science term for loving where you live. It's called place attachment. Author Melody Warnick is with us today to talk about her new book, This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving the Place You Live. Jill tweeted to Where We Live that she's moved 13 times. Academic couples move a lot, she says, on the hunt for the dual appointment. Also, Josh writes, I'm 39 and I've moved 23 times. Also, when I was a kid in New York City, it seemed like everyone moved every year or two for a better lease. So again, we're talking about how we find the place we live and why we choose to put down roots. Eileen is calling from Waterville, Ireland. Eileen, you're on Where We Live.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. So how did you end up in Ireland?
I've been traveling here for nearly 20 years. I love it. This is the town my grandmother was born in 1883. And when I was getting ready to retire, I thought, you know, on a fixed income, I probably won't be able to travel here as much as I would like. So I decided to move here.
And do you plan on coming back to Connecticut for visits, or does the distance, is it a problem?
No, I'll probably come back for visits here and there, and I may move back. I don't know. I've left myself wide open here. It's just I moved here with my two dogs, and, you know, my life is pretty open. I can do what I want.
Well, thank you, Eileen, for your call, and thanks for listening all the way from Ireland.
I listen to you all the time.
And I want to turn back to writer and freelance journalist Melody Warnick. What did you think about Eileen's story?
Eileen brought up something really interesting, which is that the place where she settled in Ireland is, in a way, her ancestral hometown. Even though she hadn't lived there before, it was the place where her grandmother was from. That's something that a lot of Americans don't have simply because we are a nation of immigrants in a way. People have been coming to America from other countries for years and years, and you may not have that feeling that this town is where generations of my family have lived. But I love what Eileen said about that, that there's kind of an emotional connection to a place where you know your family is from long term. Because place attachment is really about an emotional bond that you develop with a place. And it can happen for a lot of reasons, but certainly the sense of family roots is one of them.
Melody, can we talk a little bit about the military and its function in terms of moving people many different places and how, you know, that's part of the culture?
Being in the military or being a military spouse has its own unique challenges because you don't get a choice in where you move or when. And so people who have these moves are kind of forcibly uprooted from places where they, you know, may have made friends and feel comfortable. This is their home for them. But it speaks to the need to learn about place attachment. You know, one of the things I wanted to do with the book was explain to people how you put down roots, especially if you're in a place that you don't necessarily love and don't necessarily feel comfortable. And there are things that you can do to sort of hasten that process of feeling attached. I have a friend whose husband is in the military. They've moved around a lot, but she gave me, you know, some advice that she had gotten from her grandmother, whose husband was also in the military, and it was unpack where you are. Always unpack your suitcase. And that was kind of literal advice, like put your things in drawers and put your pictures on the wall. But it's also nice metaphorical emotional advice, too, that when you move to these places and you're in the military, you really don't have any sense of how long you're going to be there. It could be 6 months. It could be 6 years. But to make yourself feel happy there, you need to learn to make friends, invest in the community, understand where you are, and enjoy the things that are there, even if you're only going to be there for a little while.
And that's a point that you make in your book. Well, you know, what does it take to settle down and start a family? It doesn't always necessarily mean that because you settle down and you've established roots that you'll never move again.
I kind of had the misconception when I first started researching the concept of place attachment that if you were truly place attached, it meant you were never moving again. You were in your town for the long haul because you had really come to love it and it felt like you belonged there. In fact, I include in the book a place attachment quiz, questions that you can ask yourself to see how attached you are. And several of the questions relate to things like, there is no other place I'd rather live. I don't plan on moving anytime soon. So they are related. But on the other hand, I've talked to people who are incredibly invested in their communities. They love where they live. They're working really hard to create, you know, festivals or run for office in their town or things like that. And yet they acknowledge that, you know, the future is uncertain and you sometimes don't have a choice of when you move, or sometimes you just get to a point in your life where the town that's worked really well for you doesn't work anymore. You know, we get older, our life situation changes, our towns change as well. And I think it's okay to get to that point where you look around and say, I used to really love this town, and now it's time to try something new. That in itself doesn't mean that you're having, you know, a violent, mean place divorce. It can be an amicable separation where you say, this town has done so much for me. I've really enjoyed living here, and now it's time to move on, and that's okay.
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. We're talking to writer and freelance journalist Melody Warnick about her book, This Is Where You Belong. I do want to take a call from Daniel in Cheshire. Daniel, you're on Where We Live.
I've lived in Connecticut for most of my adolescent and adult life. I'm 29 years old. I have a good job. I have a good house. And there's a lot of practical reasons why Connecticut is a very good place to live with regards to the quality of life, quality of education. But there's something about the kind of values and the culture and the people that don't 100% resonate with me in a way that I was hoping for. And I think what I'm looking for in a place that I moved to is a place where the kind of cultures and the values and the people in the arts and entertainment, maybe that's a little different. It's something that I found here, especially in New England, between New York and Boston. There's that New York minute, that New England minute, where everything is very fast and very aggressive. And in my travels a lot for work, I found that that's really not the case everywhere. And I'm very curious to see what there is outside of Connecticut. And it's kind of in those kind of cursory travels to places like Seattle, to places like Alabama, these much kind of very different culturally speaking.
So
appeal to me.
So Daniel, if you could move to one place in this country, where would you move to?
Right now, I'm looking at Seattle. I really like the music scene there. The music is very important to me, and there's a lot of very rich musical places. I think that they have a very good industry there too, and they really value the environment as well. So that's something that's important to me.
Well, Daniel, thank you so much for your call. Melody, interesting that Daniel mentions a lot about the change of pace and looking for, you know, a cultural place where, you know, he feels more connected to something that he values, such as music.
Right. When we talk about towns, there's actually research that places have different personalities. And what I mean by that is that people with different personalities tend to congregate in certain places. There was a study by a Cambridge researcher named Jason Renfro, and he did personality tests and then analyzed the data geographically. And he found that, for instance, neurotic people tended to congregate in the Northeast, whereas the South tended to be a little more amiable. And open people who are open to new experiences, kind of like what Daniel's describing with, you know, wanting people who are creative and into, you know, interesting music, tend to congregate on the coast. So I think a lot of finding where you should be, finding the right place for you, is finding a place that resonates with your personality, who you are, what you value, the kind of people you want to spend time with. A lot of feeling comfortable in a place or building place attachment is building social networks, building social capital, and you do that by making friends. That happens a lot easier if you happen to be in a place where the people are kind of like you. Mm-hmm. They reflect your interests. And traveling is a good way to investigate that. Sometimes we visit a city and we instantly kind of feel like this is my kind of town. It's interesting that Daniel mentioned Seattle, because I was just in Seattle last week and I remember thinking, this isn't my kind of town, because, you know, I don't think I'm as willing as I need to be to, like, get piercings and dye my hair. But I think Daniel is probably more open to new experience than I am. And it sounds like it would be a good fit for him. So there takes, you know, it takes some investigation to find that right place for your personality.
I would think that not everyone believes that moving around so much is a good thing or is reflective of the society we live in. I want to take a call, an interesting comment. Eric from Cheshire. Eric, you're on Where We Live.
I want to say, as somebody who stayed put his whole life, how concerned I am with how this might relate to Americans' increasing ability to justify throwing things away, you know, the disposable society, and the grass is always greener, and, you know, the divorce rate, and what the penalties are if this has been studied, and what it does to your infrastructure when people treat their homes as though they're only going to be there for a few years. I've taken some ribbing for doing things to my home, like putting on copper roofing and using, like, building techniques that I want my grandchildren to benefit from. It's so uncommon now, at least in this country. So, I mean, how might that all come together, if you want to comment?
All right. Well, thank you, Eric, for your comment. Melody?
He's exactly right, that we have a society that craves novelty, and that makes us treat a lot of things as disposable, you know, not just our places, but, like he mentioned, our relationships and our homes. You know, we build for something temporary, and it certainly affects the way communities build, the way they create themselves. It's pretty unusual to find someone like Eric who is building his house for the long, long term. You know, most of us kind of assume that we're only going to be in a place for a little while. But there definitely are downsides. You know, there are downsides structurally, but there are also downsides to us as individuals. There was a study that I think is really interesting out of Japan that found that women who stayed put and were happy in their community, they knew their neighbors, they trusted them, lived 6% longer than those who didn't. There are other studies that show that moving a lot of geographic mobility is associated with negative outcomes, especially for adolescents. They're more likely to do poorly in school, more likely to experiment with drugs and alcohol. Mm-hmm. One study found that introverts who move a lot as children and maybe, you know, because of their introversion are a little less equipped to handle it, have a poorer quality of life, even as adults, that this is something that affects their health and their mental well-being for years and years. So simply the act of moving, you know, we sometimes think of it, and I know I have, as a solution to our problems. You don't like where you live, you don't like your job, you don't like your neighbors, just move away, and those problems go away. But what we realize is that moving itself can sometimes create new challenges, and that there are benefits to our health and our emotional well-being simply for choosing to stay despite everything.
You know, it's interesting you talk about the downsides to moving. When you look at here in Connecticut, there's a lot of conversation about often retirees say, you know, it's too expensive to live in Connecticut, and they look to move elsewhere, oftentimes to the south. But we think about, you know, the impact of that of people leaving. So there's not the, obviously, the tax revenue to the state. But these people who have chosen or maybe born and raised in Connecticut, have raised their family, have been able to take advantage of the quality of life, but then feeling like they need to leave. And so all that attachment to the community, their involvement, their participation, that goes away too.
Right, exactly. And that's one of my big pet peeves, actually. A lot of people look to retirement as the chance to, you know, I'm going to escape, I'm going to go live by the ocean. But you have spent your adult years building, you know, social relationships, investing in a community, building trust, and you're finally at a point in your life where you have a lot of resources, financial and in terms of time and skill, to really contribute back to your town. And to suddenly take that away not only is a huge detriment to the place where you live, but it can be really more difficult than the retirees imagine. You know, part of place attachment is time. It's, you know, spending a lot of time in a place, really coming to identify with it. You have all these happy memories in your community. You've built your own personal narrative in a particular place. And sometimes we don't think about the consequences of simply, you know, cutting off those roots and replanting ourselves elsewhere. You know, I'm not against moving, and sometimes it is the right solution for people. But there are sad results from that for you and for your town.
And before we go to break, Melody Warnick, again, author of This Is Where You Belong, you know, what are some of your takeaways? Obviously, you traveled to a lot of different places when you're researching this book to find out why people choose the homes where they are and why they decide to keep to lay down roots.
One of the main things I learned about towns is that there really is no single town for everyone. I talked to people who lived in the same place, and one would rave about it and, you know, how great it was. They loved living here. And the next person you talk to would say, oh, I hate it here. I can't wait to escape. And I'm sure that's an experience that everyone has had. You know, whether or not you like your town, you know someone who likes it and you know someone who hates it. So that suggests that a lot of our feelings about our town are simply emotional, and we can control some of that with our actions, you know, and with our choices. So choose to love your town, choose to be happy there, choose to make it better, and reap the benefits for your health and happiness that come from place attachment.
Melody Warnick is a freelance journalist and author of This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving the Place You Live. Thank you so much for speaking with us, Melody.
Thanks so much for having me, Lucy.
Coming up, writer Richard Conniff shares his latest article on Connecticut and asks the question, are we really part of New England? This is where we live. This is where we live. I'm Lucy Nalbathanchel. Joining us by phone now is Richard Conniff, Connecticut-based writer and journalist. His new book is called House of Lost Worlds, Dinosaurs, Dynasties, and the Story of Life on Earth. And we're talking to him today about an article he wrote recently in Yankee Magazine. Richard, welcome to Where We Live.
Hey, Lucy. Nice to be here.
I'm not sure if you're able to listen to the first part of the show, but we were talking with journalist Melody Warnick about the science of loving where you live and what influences us to make a home in a specific place. I was wondering how you ended up in Connecticut, Richard.
So I've lived in Connecticut for 37 years, a little bit off and on in the beginning. I came here to go to school, first of all, and then we moved to Deep River back in the early 1980s, and we've stayed here in the Connecticut River Valley pretty much ever since.
So you wrote an interesting article in Yankee Magazine about the question of, you know, Connecticut's place in New England. What prompted you to write that?
Well, so it started with my editor, and he asked me if I could investigate this sort of idea that the rest of New England treats Connecticut with a bit of disdain. You know, they have this group called the Heart of New England, which consists of Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine, and, you know, we're left out, clearly. And it's not just that northern New England sort of leaves us out. We're kind of the butt of jokes. So Jon Stewart on The Daily Show last year, he said, Connecticut is a state that, let's be honest, nobody else in the region likes or respects. And the really humiliating thing was that he was talking about the Mid-Atlantic region.
You know, it's interesting. So you said you've lived here for more than 30 years. You know, I've been here for 10 years. You know, we can understand why some people choose to live in Connecticut. But it's interesting when you think about Connecticut as part of New England. I'm sure you probably remember a few years ago there was that embarrassment where Connecticut wasn't even included on this map of New England. Do you remember that with tourism?
But, you know, I was in a beer store in Portland, Maine recently, and they had our Connecticut beers classified in the Mid-Atlantic section.
Oh, man.
So it goes on in all kinds of little ways. But in fact, you know, I called up the geologist Robert M. Thorson at the University of Connecticut, and we are in all geologic and geographic ways part of New England. That is that same mountain ridge that runs up to Acadia in Maine, or to Mount Katahdin, rather, starts in Westchester County and in Fairfield County, and it runs right up through Massachusetts and ties us all together. And we have the same kind of forests and rocky fields and the same kind of rocky coasts that you will find on the coast of Maine. So really there's no distinction, no legitimate distinction. It's a cultural thing, and I think it's obviously because of our proximity to New York, or maybe more than that, it's because we are sort of, as someone said earlier, a compromise between New York and Boston. We're sort of drawn. There's this thing that Benjamin Franklin said about New Jersey. He called it a barrel with a bunghole at both ends, and meaning that all of its culture was drawn out one way or the other, and we're kind of like that, too.
You write that we're considered kind of the flyover state, pass-through.
Yes, that's right. People define us the same way, you know, they define New Jersey by the Jersey Turnpike. They define us by Route 95 and by 91, and we're just something to get through on the way to Cape Cod or on the way to, you know, the real New England in Maine or elsewhere. And that's kind of unfortunate because if you live here, and in particular, well, in the article, I come around to saying that what really unites us and makes us distinct is our waterways, our rivers. There are a lot of them, particularly the Connecticut River, and our coastline. You know, so it's 100 miles of coast from New York border to Rhode Island. But then if you look at the nooks and crannies, it's like 600 miles, and they're all worth exploring. And the water is really important.
Do you think we make too much of it for us who live in New England or in Connecticut? Do we make too much of it of people's impressions of us, whether it's if people in Maine and New Hampshire, what they think of us as part of New England, or our neighbors to the south? I mean, why should we care?
Well, yeah, we do have a bit of an insecurity problem. But, you know, the other thing about Connecticut that's really puzzling to me, and this goes back, you know, so traveling as a writer, I would go to Ireland and I would see this country that was not a whole lot larger than Connecticut, with a population not a whole lot larger, and it had this really distinctive literature with Joyce and Yeats and right up to the present day, Seamus Heaney and so on. And then I'd come back to Connecticut, and there is nobody who writes about Connecticut. I mean, even the writers here who are famous don't have, you know, they don't. Mark Twain wrote about the Mississippi River. Harriet Beecher Stowe wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin about the South. Arthur Miller also, you know, Salem, Massachusetts, and Brooklyn, not Connecticut. So we don't have any kind of sense of our own identity that way.
And do you think that plays into the fact that there's so much talk about people wanting to leave Connecticut?
I do. Bill Hosley is an art museum curator and a Connecticut fanatic, and he's pointed out to me that the one thing we really do have an identity about is our towns, you know, our 169 towns, and each of those towns has its own very distinct sense of itself, and multiple museums. The number of museums in the state is extraordinary, and that's something that maybe can give us some thread of a larger identity as a state. So that, you know, the town that I lived in before, Deep River, I was traveling around writing about wildlife, and, you know, doing what I thought were big stories. But then I came home and I discovered the ivory trade on my doorstep, and discovered that Deep River had been the center of the ivory trade in the Western Hemisphere in the 19th century. And that felt like a pretty big story. And I think any town that you look at in any part of the state, you will find something like that that has repercussions well beyond the borders of that town.
There's certainly a lot of history here, and we've been focusing on that in the last couple of weeks. But do you think you've been lived here for more than 30 years, do you think that we'll get past this this image perception of Connecticut, where we'll be considered part of New England and it won't be such a chip on our shoulder?
Yeah, I don't think we should care so much about whether New England, Northern New England, considers us part of the region. We are part of the region. We should forget that. Okay. But I think we should, I mean, we need some bigger sense of Connecticut as a single entity, a place that we're part of, and that doesn't exist. And, you know, I suggested during the pre-interview for this show that what it would take is a Bruce Springsteen for Connecticut. And instead what we have is, you know, Gene Pitney, the Rockville Rocket. So I'm not sure how we get there, but something that makes people, you know, proud to say that they're from Connecticut is what we're lacking.
I hear Colin McEnroe is a pretty good singer. Maybe he could take us there.
Colin McEnroe is a terrific writer as well as a great radio host, and he could do it.
Well, I want to thank Richard Conniff again, Connecticut-based writer and journalist. His new book is called House of Lost Worlds, Dinosaurs, Dynasties, and the Story of Life on Earth. His latest article is in Yankee Magazine. So, Richard, maybe the next time you write an article, really pump up Connecticut. Make us feel good about ourselves.
You bet.
I want to thank our show producers, Lydia Brown and Jeff Tyson. Our digital editor is Heather Brandon. Executive producer is Katie Tolarski. Thanks again for our callers today and so many tweets at Where We Live. You can always continue this conversation on our website, WMPR.org/Where We Live. I'm actually moving today to Suffield, Connecticut. Thanks for listening.